How are you?
I'll have to just come in with my own intro.
You've got your own intro. Okay, so Anthony Wright, for the best.
I'll just come in with my own intro.
For the stories behind the news. Dun-da-da-da! Anthony Wright. Mo'ed l'simcha.
Mo'edim l'simcha. How are you guys doing?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, the Seder in singular is behind us, and I guess in your case in plural. And we've had the discussion about how the matzah is this year, and we've assessed the Knedlach and whether it was all up to standard. And now we're into kind of the fun part of Pesach, aren't we?
Certainly we are. You know what? I think that if we make so much of our holidays about food, and that really is the minor part of it. The minor part of Pesach is the food and not eating chometz. The major part of Pesach is that there are these amazing energies of liberation and emancipation. And sometimes a year can go by and we can completely ignore that.
Somewhat true, because it seems as if, though, Pesach is more about food than anything. Everybody is constantly, for the full period of Pesach, 7 or 8 days, whatever, you know, your particular bent is, talking about what you're missing and what you would like to eat and how amazing it is that we've got Pesach tikka rolls. So what's the point of it? And cakes and, you know, every kind of Pesach tikka thing you could ever imagine.
So does it feel like Pesach? Does it actually feel like, when you've got Pesach tikka burger rolls and Pesach tikka donuts and Pesach tikka everything, every sort of confection and cakes and things like that, does it feel like Pesach?
Well, you see, then you can talk about the emancipation rather than the food, except we still seem to be obsessed with the food. And of course, when you turn up at McDonald's and they have a sign, you know, they have these automatic ordering screens that you can just put your own order in. The first thing that comes up on the screen is, we're on our Pesach menu, so please take note of that. And of course, all the items that are for sale are amended in order to be kosher for Pesach. And this is really how it goes around here, that everything is really just adapted rather than, you know, you going without. They just adapt things in order to make them kosher for Pesach, except for those food outlets that decide that this is a good time to renovate the restaurant or the coffee shop. And it was amazing because on Friday I was walking around the city just before Pesach, and one of the coffee shops that's nearby a place that I was visiting was already being completely like destroyed even on Friday. I mean, they take the advantage of the fact that they have got, you know, no business over Pesach. Obviously that coffee shop decided not to be kosher for Pesach, and so they would ordinarily therefore have had to close down, and instead they were renovating the place, and the demolition was already done by the time they got to the Seder night. And so they're obviously using this week in order to renovate. And so it's amazing how much a huge work is being done, renovation work in the food industry, to use this week while people are not frequenting the place and while the places are not open. So that's just another thing that happens in Pesach in food outlets around Israel.
Do people travel a lot during Pesach? I know that tourism, a lot of people travel to Israel, but what about Israelis? What do Israelis do during this time?
So Pesach is a very, very busy time, and unfortunately, and uncharacteristically, we've had very, very cool weather. We heard the weather forecast when Zanati gave the news in the forecast. It's been cool, and yesterday there was rain and even snow in the Golan, would you believe, and hail in some parts of Israel. Very, very unusual for this time of year. In fact, the words on everybody's lips are, you know, how come it is that it's raining when we're already in the middle towards the end of April? It's like very, very unusual. Not only is there still rain, which of course we do need and we keep reminding ourselves of that, but actually it's quite cool. And yesterday there was a very, very cool wind that it was coming off the sea. And so it was quite cool and uncharacteristic for this time of year. But generally speaking, Pesach is, you know, spring, Chag Aviv, it's the festival of spring. People are going out and about, the flowers are out, and people are, like, you know, enjoying the opportunity to get outdoors when it's not too cold but also not too hot. And there are many places that make their facilities open for free during Pesach to allow children and parents alike to travel around up in the north, nature reserves and, you know, all kinds of parks and items of interest for traveling Israelis as well as foreigners who come here. And of course, so this is really the typical thing that people like to do around Pesach time. And we hope that the weather will warm up a little bit. Today still seems quite cool, but perhaps over the next couple of days, and will allow people to do those traditional Pesach activities, which involve being outdoors, because that's what Israelis generally like to do. And over Pesach, they certainly do get up to it. But having said that, I've noticed a lot of foreigners here, a lot of tourists come from outside of Israel. And of course, today is the big day in Jerusalem when there will be the Birkat HaKohanim, the group priestly blessing that takes place at the Kotel. Tens of thousands of people will turn up for that later this morning, when you can literally hear a pin drop as all the Kohanim together pronounce a priestly blessing for all of those present. It is certainly a moving ceremony, and one that's very worthwhile having the opportunity to experience for those people, especially who come from outside of Israel.
Fantastic. Anthony, let's get on to some harder news. It seems that work has been continuing to build a new coalition government in spite of Pesach. So what are the latest developments that you're aware of?
Well, some quite interesting ones, to be honest, and particularly interesting in view of the fact that it is Pesach time, and generally people like to take a break, even politicians, over Pesach. But we understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu has already been meeting with leaders of some of the other parties who he would like to bring into his coalition government. And particularly, a meeting was supposedly set up yesterday with the head of the Israel Beiteinu party, Avigdor Lieberman, in order to try to talk to him about what his requirements would be to participate in a coalition government. Now, we do know that he is potentially the difference between a coalition government being formed or not being formed by the Likud, using the group of right-wing parties who were members of the coalition during the last Knesset. And the most likely outcome in terms of the way that the press is certainly seeing things is that that will be the coalition government going forward, except for the fact that Avigdor Lieberman is very reluctant to sit in a coalition government with the Haredi parties, with the ultra-Orthodox parties, where they have demanded that there will be this bill that will allow the yeshiva boys not to have to serve in the army. So Lieberman is very much opposed to promoting this new law that the Haredi parties are demanding and as their requirement for sitting in the coalition government. And he has already warned that if that bill is actually taken on board as part of the government's program of the laws that will be passed during the next Knesset, then Lieberman is not interested in sitting in that particular coalition government. And that could potentially mean that the Likud will not form a coalition, because Lieberman's five seats are critical to the formation of that government. So we understand that there were talks yesterday between Prime Minister Netanyahu and Lieberman. And interestingly, the talks did not only center on how the Yisrael Beiteinu party might participate in the coalition government, but apparently, if we believe what's written in the press, there was some discussion about even integrating Yisrael Beiteinu into Likud, for that to become actually part of Likud. Now, Yisrael Beiteinu and Avigdor Lieberman in particular have come from a Likud background. Let's not forget that Avigdor Lieberman was, in fact, a Prime Minister Netanyahu's chief of staff in his office as Prime Minister in his very, very first term as Prime Minister way back when. So there is obviously a history where Lieberman was part of the Likud, and in fact many of the members of the Yisrael Beiteinu party also came from that background. And now there's talk about reintegrating them back into the Likud. The Yisrael Beiteinu spokesman has denied that these talks have taken place, or that Yisrael Beiteinu are even interested in becoming part of the Likud again. But let's not forget that they were very, very lucky to even get beyond the minimum number of votes required to even have seats in the Knesset. They only just made the minimum by a very, very small margin. And so there might be some advantage to them to integrate into the Likud in order to at least assure themselves of a certain amount of support, because there is the possibility that come the next Knesset, Yisrael Beiteinu might not even make it beyond the threshold which allows them to take up seats in the Knesset. So that's going to be an interesting discussion, and we will see how that pans out over the next few weeks. I'm sure that we won't know any results of those discussions, at least until after the end of Pesach. And equally, we understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu is due to meet with our current finance minister, actually, Kahlon, who also, he's the head of the Kulanu party, of course, and he also, Moshe Kahlon, comes from a Likud background, and apparently there is talk about trying somehow also to integrate Kulanu back into the Likud, with Moshe Kahlon coming back into the Likud. So this seems to be a strategy at the moment that the Likud are following. Instead of trying to sign them up to be members of the coalition, trying somehow to pull those parties back in under the umbrella of the Likud. I'm not sure how successful that will be. Moshe Kahlon apparently has been reputed to have been offered the foreign ministry position, which he doesn't want. He is quite determined to continue as finance minister as he was in the previous government. We will see also how that particular exercise goes and whether Likud is successful in somehow bringing these parties into being part of the Likud rather than just becoming coalition partners in the next government.
Very interesting. Listen, time will tell.
Time will tell, and you know, there's a lot of water that will flow under the bridge, and I think that we won't really know how successful these discussions are until all of the discussions with the various potential coalition partners have taken place, especially the ultra-Orthodox parties, because, you know, we know that Lieberman will not give his final answer as to whether he will participate in the next coalition or not until he knows exactly whether that draft legislation for the draft of the Haredi, the yeshiva boys, will pass through the Knesset or not. And that seems to be his red line. So until all of the discussions have taken place, which I expect will take, you know, the next couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks maybe, we won't really know how the likes of Avigdor Lieberman will fall on this particular matter.
What's the sense amongst Israelis? Are they happy with the vote? Are they not happy with the vote? When I was there, I couldn't believe how many people were very much anti Bibi Netanyahu, and it wasn't necessarily because there was a specific reason other than he's been in power too long.
I think there is definitely a feeling that he's been in power too long, and that you know, that is the reason why some of this corruption has surfaced. You know, there is a feeling which says that people who stay in office for too long get too comfortable, and it's too easy for them to become complacent in terms of their behavior, and this promotes corruption in turn. And that's why there was a very, very strong amount of support for people who feel that we need legislation in this country to limit the term in which the number of terms that a prime minister can serve. And there is a lot of support for Benny Gantz's position, who said that, you know, we should really limit a prime minister to be able to serve two terms like they do in the United States, where the president only has two terms. And that forces then the rotation, and it prevents the situation that we have now, where Netanyahu has really worked quite specifically not to promote some sort of a succession plan. He has no logical person who can succeed him, and he's made sure of that in order to ensure that there is nobody who can threaten his position as prime minister. And that seems to be unhealthy for the country. We need to have a system which promotes the idea of succession, which brings the young people forward, which allows them to work under the mentorship of the older generation, and finally put them into power in a very organized fashion, rather than the way that we see it now, where if anybody succeeds Prime Minister Netanyahu, it will be with elbows out, and it will be a battle to the death. And finally, that person, I expect, will take over, and he'll have no mentorship and no experience and no grooming for the position. And that's clearly not good for our country. And we really do need some sort of a system which does promote the grooming of the next logical leader. So at the moment, that's not the case. And there is a lot of support for that idea. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening anytime soon, particularly not with Prime Minister Netanyahu in the seat. He's very determined to hang on to it for himself. In terms of what people think, I think that people were not surprised that he is the person who's forming the next coalition. But I think that this particular government is going to be one which will ultimately have a lot of influence over where things go next, because if the Attorney General does indeed pursue this charge against Prime Minister Netanyahu, then we're going to have to face some real decisions from the Prime Minister as to whether he's prepared to continue in his position as Prime Minister while facing these legal claims. I think the country says he should not, but I think equally the country says that until such time as those charges are brought formally against him, he has nothing to answer, at least for now, and therefore there should be no reason why he can't serve as Prime Minister. So I think that those are the views, but I think that when, if and when, those formal charges are ultimately brought against him, I think that that will be a defining moment, and I think that that's potentially when we're going to see quite a lot of change in our political sphere.
Do you think it would change if he actually had... because he's Prime Minister, but he holds three other ministerial positions, doesn't he?
He has held many other ministerial positions.
No, but I mean, at the same time. I mean, wasn't he also education minister or foreign affairs?
He was the Minister of Foreign Affairs all the time, and he was the Minister of Defense for a period of time, and he was the Minister of Health, and he was the Minister. He had numerous ministries under his personal control, which clearly is not okay, and it's not acceptable, and it's not good for the country. So we hope that now that he has the opportunity to redistribute all of the ministerial positions, that he will actually go about filling those jobs as he builds a new coalition.
Yeah. All right, Anthony, very quickly and finally, Israel has offered assistance to Sri Lanka following the Easter terror attacks there. The headline this morning that the death toll has climbed to 290, 450 people injured. What assistance is Israel offered?
Well, first of all, Prime Minister Netanyahu has expressed his deep shock at the attacks in Sri Lanka. I saw somewhere that even more than 300 people might have been killed, but it doesn't really matter because it's obviously been a very, very serious attack that's been carried out, and he's offered whatever Israel is able to assist with. Interestingly, Israel has no embassy in Colombo in Sri Lanka, and the relations between Israel and Sri Lanka have really been up and down a great deal over the years. Currently, there is actually a Sri Lankan embassy in Israel, and that embassy mostly deals with the huge number of Sri Lankan nationals who are working as caregivers in Israel. Some numbers have estimated that there might be as many as 10,000 Sri Lankans working in Israel as caregivers. And so that embassy seems to be dealing mostly with consular issues relating to those Sri Lankans are working. And of course, the Israelis who visit Sri Lanka, apparently there's something like 8,000 Israelis who visit Sri Lanka each year. And so it's quite a popular destination. But the Prime Minister has offered whatever help Israel can offer, which is financial assistance and also potentially sending people over to help with the recovery process, which clearly Sri Lanka will be involved with. But I think just a little snippet, which was very interesting for me, was that actually Israel had already trained a team of Sri Lankan first responders in Colombo earlier this year to deal with mass casualty incidents and disaster management. And this was in conjunction with the American Jewish Committee, who paid for this work, and that the Hatzalah organization from Israel actually went over to Colombo and trained people as to how they would deal with exactly the situation that they're dealing with right now from the point of view of medical and just first response. So the work that Israel would like to do, a lot of it has already been done in preparing the Sri Lankan first responders for the situation, and I think that we have a great deal to be proud of in terms of having been involved with that.
Amazing. Anthony Reich, that is where we leave it.
I wish you a good Pesach ahead, a nice Chol HaMoed day, and we will be talking again tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
You are not mistaken. The whole week you got me, Anthony.
The whole week. So we will talk more about Pesach, and of course, even though people are on holiday and relaxing, all the rest of it, we still do encourage people to write in and have their say. If there's anything particular that they would like me to talk about, I would be happy to hear about it.
All right, so I've got one question from Clive Jacobson. He says, why did the Jews wander in the desert for 40 years? It took them that long to find the only country without oil.
Well, apparently, gas is the thing now. It's not only about oil. The oil is like so like 1990s, you know. Now we're into natural gas, Clive. So, you know, we finally know why we came to Israel. We've got the natural gas and, of course, loads and loads of other interesting things. Oil is not everything.
Thank you, Anthony Reich. Look forward to speaking to you tomorrow. Have a lovely day.
Take care.
God bless. Bye-bye. Bye.